Excuse me, I'd like to remind all parties today's call is now being recorded. You may begin.
Okay, thanks. This is John Cundy. Thanks for this opportunity. If you're following along with the PowerPoint presentation, let's now go to slide two. Give my summary or my analysis of the Big Square Bale system. It is a commercial system. It's in operation for the hay industry. It's much development is already completed and more is in progress. If you look at the DOE feedstock logistics projects, several of those are fine-tuning, amplifying, and improving the Big Square Bale system. However, it is not appropriate for many areas in the Southeast. My work has always been focused on the Southeast. I'm not a national person. I am a regional person. And so the kinds of things that I'm going to be talking about are more geared to the Southeast. Now, slide three. Here's a summary of the situation. If you look at a truckload of Big Square Bales, 25 tons, 15% moisture content, you have 21.2 dry tons on your truck. If you look at a truckload of round bales, you'll have about 12.5 tons of material at 15% moisture content, 10.6 dry tons on the truck. So there are some of you who at this point will say, well, obviously, we don't need to go any further. This poor, confused person is going to talk about round bales, and obviously the round bale can't compete. But I'm going to try to raise a few points, perhaps, that you have not thought about before. Okay. Slide four. First, let me answer the question, why the Southeast? Two reasons. We in the Southeast have not only a wonderful woody biomass potential, but we have also a significant herbaceous biomass potential. The reason for that is two reasons. One, we have land that can be brought into production without competing with the food industry, food production. And the second reason is that we have a lot of rainfall. In the upper Southeast, in South Central Virginia, where I have been doing my work, we have 45 inches of rainfall a year. And so why the round bale? Okay. Next slide, slide five. Baling in general, and certainly the round baling particularly, allows the uncoupling of the harvesting and infield hauling operations. That offers a significant advantage. For those who advocate coming right out of the field, right out of the harvesting operation, right onto highway trucks for delivery, we'll talk about that a little bit later, but that, to me, is a logistical nightmare, particularly for conditions that we find there in the Southeast where I've been doing my work. Next point is the round bale, a net wrap round bale, and specifically a net wrap round bale of switchgrass, protects itself in uncovered storage. I have a number of times stored these bales in single-layer ambient storage, and over a six-month period, have considerably less than a 5% storage handling loss. So this is a valid option. It's available to us in the Southeast, and we can use it effectively. Now, the third point is that round balers are used for existing cattle operations, and the energy crop harvest occurs at a different time. The additional harvest operating hours for the round baler benefits both enterprises. So there's compatibility between the existing agriculture and the establishment of a bioenergy industry.
John?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Bob Allen, right, Pat. Should I hold these questions? I have a question for you about your first bullet here.
No problem.
Okay, you're asking about, are you talking about uncoupling, baling, and infield hauling operations? I don't understand that. What do you mean by uncoupling?
It means I can drop the bale in the field and go back the next day or the next week or even the next month and haul that hay out of the field.
Okay, you got them wrapped so they're not going to deteriorate and you leave them there pretty much as long as you want, huh?
That's correct.
Okay,
I
gotcha.
I advocate three wraps of net wrap. Work done up in Wisconsin, Kevin Shiners, and if I don't know if Kevin's on the line. I hope he is because he can jump in and clarify, but he advocates four wraps of net. Mm-hmm. Kevin, are you out there? Probably not. Okay, but at any rate, if you wrap with net, and this is switchgrass, which is a long fiber, it thatches beautifully, these bales will shed water and store quite well in their own without any help.
I gotcha.
I have a short question, John. This is Sam.
Yes, sir.
First is your round bale and large bale. You have some tons and size. What is the initial density, say with 15% moisture? What kind of pounds per cubic foot do you get in a round bale?
About 11 pounds per cubic foot.
How about the...
A 5-foot diameter bale weighs around 900 pounds.
How about square bale?
The square bale is higher. I haven't worked with the square bale myself.
Okay, all right. Okay. I mean, it's still not clear up to here why you said why round ball, I mean, why round bill is superior. Uncoupling, I just understood. But density-wise, it is less.
That is correct.
Okay. All right, go ahead.
Here's the deal. You are going to give up something with the round bale, but you're going to gain something as well. It's a system problem. You don't solve one segment of the whole logistical chain. You put together the whole chain.
Okay, but is it not the round bales when you load them, there's a considerable gaps in between? Square bales can probably...
That is correct.
Pick up all the space?
I explained at the very beginning, you're going to give up something with the round bale.
Okay.
And the question is, can you gain at other points to more than offset that disadvantage?
All right.
And people, as they consider what's being said here, they'll make up their own mind on the positives and the negatives. I'm trying to lift them all up, what the positives are, what the negatives are.
Okay. All right.
All right, so now going to slide 6. Okay, do we want the plantation model, or do we want a bioindustry where the smallest farm gate contract is 100 acres? And I'm an advocate of the opportunities for smaller contracts. And we'll explain that more later. All right, a farm gate contract. If my contract is to grow, harvest, I'm on slide 7 now. If my contract is to grow, harvest, in net wrap round bales and place in a satellite storage location, then the 100-acre minimum is viable. If my contract is to grow, harvest in big square bales, store in covered storage, and deliver X loads per week to the bioenergy plant, then the 100-acre minimum is not viable. So you need to understand that I am organizing my thinking here to support the smaller contracts. Questions about that?
Oh, what is the plantation model? How big is it?
No, that's the sugarcane model.
Okay.
That's in South Florida, the sugar mill owns the production fields, owns the roads through the fields, owns the harvesting equipment. It's an integrated enterprise.
Okay.
That's the plantation model.
Okay, I got it.
Okay, slide 8. All right, why not sell herbaceous biomass standing in the field? That's the way woody biomass is handled in the Southeast. If I am a landowner and I want to get a stand of timber cut, I don't cut it myself and take it to the sawmill, I will contract particularly with a broker who's going to hire a logger to come in and cut the material and deliver it, and then I'll get my portion. And so this model works in some cases for crop residues. I will mention corn stover in central Kansas and wheat straw in Idaho as examples. It does not work for switchgrass, and switchgrass is the model crop that I'm going to be talking about for the Southeast. Well, why doesn't it work? Let's go to the slide 9. If my profit depends on the productivity of my switchgrass stand over the 10-year life of my contract, I do not want a contractor coming into my field and damaging the stand. In other words, I need to have control of the harvesting operation. And this is particularly important for winter harvest. You see, in the Southeast, we can harvest throughout the winter. The latest that I've harvested switchgrass was March the 31st.
right, John?
Yes.
How long does switchgrass last?
How long does it last?
Yeah.
How long does a stand last?
Yeah.
I use the 10-year. It lasts longer than that, as long as you use reasonable management. You can just keep it going. But in practical terms, at the end of 10 years, there's probably going to be a variety coming along that's much improved over the ones you're using, and you'd want to plow it up and start over.
Okay, so 10 years is about the life before it's overcome by technological advances.
Yes. And some might advocate that it would be less than 10 years, and we all hope that it is, because we hope that these genetic improvements are going to do all that we're are hoping they will. Okay, next slide, 10. Okay, now this is an issue, and it'll be interesting to see how this is talked about. Would you rather have 200 round balers under the control of 200 farm gate contract holders seeking winter harvest opportunities across a 30-mile radius feedstock supply area, or would you rather have 20 big square balers under control of 20 contractors? Do you understand the point that is lifted up?
Once more.
Are you basically trying to clarify between having owner-operators doing their own harvest versus third-party contractors?
Yes, yes. When you have smaller fields and smaller farm gate contracts, the fact that you've got a large number of people out there seeking opportunities to harvest their own material gives you a robustness in your system that we typically have not valued, and I believe we should be valuing. If you go to the next slide, which is slide 11, how much is that robustness worth? And at what point will the industry be ready to pay for this robustness? Does this make any sense to the audience out there?
Oh, sure. Yep, I get it.
Okay. All right, let's go ahead to the point 11, slide 11. So let's summarize here. Is baling cost dollars per ton higher for the round baler? The answer is yes. Is hauling cost dollars per ton higher for the round bale? And I put down maybe not. So we'll see if what you think about that. Let's take an illustration here. The big square bale, 25-ton load, 40 minutes to load the truck, 25-mile haul, average speed 45 miles an hour, 10 minutes to unload, 10-hour workday. I can haul 125 tons per day per truck. Now let's look at the round bale. 12.5 tons per load, 10 minutes to load, 25-mile haul, average speed of 45 miles an hour, 10 minutes to unload. Now I'm going to shock you. 24-hour workday, you're going to haul around the clock. Have I lost anybody?
Yes, you did.
All right. Now, if I can haul for 24 hours, I'm going to get 207.5 tons per day per truck, or 66% more than the big square bale.
Why couldn't you just haul 24 hours with a big truck and a big bale?
You could, and I suspect that will eventually be done.
I have another question for you, John.
Go ahead.
Sorry. Why are the round balers, why is baling cost to round balers higher? Your baling cost dollars per ton is higher for the round bale, but why is that?
Well, it is a little bit higher, and particularly for the 5-foot diameter, 4-foot wide bale that I've been working with. And that's simply because you don't get as many tons per hour through your machine as you get with the big square baler.
I see. But the cost of, I don't know which pull one of them big square balers with, but that's got to take some serious horsepower.
You need over 200 horsepower tractor to really operate the machine.
that's got to be considered too. I mean, a small round baler, or even a, or you know what I'm getting at.
Yes, yes, yes. In the area where I'm working, you have very few people that have 200 horsepower tractors. You have a lot of people that have 80 horsepower tractors, and they can operate their round baler because they do that for their cattle feeding operation.
John?
Yes.
This is Dick Hague speaking. Good afternoon.
Dick, if I'd known you'd have been on, I would have been going slower.
The question that I have, are you assuming then on these smaller 100-acre situations that who's going to be doing the cutting and the raking and this type of thing in preparing for the baler?
The farm gate contract holder. The farm gate contract covers growing and harvesting the material and putting it into a satellite storage location.
Okay.
That's your farm gate contract.
Now, for the large square baler situation, are we still looking at a contractor, a big one doing all that cutting and preparatory work?
I think you'd have to.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. I think if big square bale is going to be used in the southeast, it would be contract harvesting.
Right, okay. Thank you.
But John, again, the 24-hour work day, that sounds kind of, you know, as you were saying, that square bales could be done that way too.
Yes.
They have to be, the same kind of parameters should be in both.
Yes.
So,
you'd simply run your trucks 24 hours a day. You'd have three shifts. A driver would work 8 hours and slide out of the seat, another one work 8 hours and so forth. You just run continuously.
So same thing applies to large square bales as well?
Yes, yes. So. I don't know anybody that's advocating 24-hour hauling for the big square bale, but at some point the industry, I think, is going to get to that.
But that means it is not, this is an apple to orange comparison, you know?
It's applicable to what?
Apple to orange. I mean, not exactly the same thing. They both should be same kind of ton, minutes, miles, and working hours. 10 hours a day and 24 hours a day.
Yes.
That will make a lot of difference in your cost number.
Yes.
So, I mean, can you assume that? 24 hours a day for one and 10 hours a day for the other one.
Well, I wanted to make my round bale system look good, Sam.
That I understand. That you have done so, yes.
Okay. All right, let's move on to slide 17. Is there a way to cost effectively load in 10 minutes? I'm advocating that you load the truck in 10 minutes and you unload the truck in 10 minutes. And so you look at that and immediately you know that single bale handling is not going to be competitive. Even with the big square bale system, they're picking up six bales at a time and loading them. So single bale handling is not going to work for anybody. And then the other issue is there a cost-effective way to haul 24 hours? And of course, this means that you'll be loading trucks at 3 a.m. out at a rural site. And so how feasible is that? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to have a system where that's feasible if you're going to advocate 24-hour hauling. Okay, the concept that I have been talking about is a 16-bale rack. And if you look at slide 18, you'll see that there are two of those racks sitting on a tractor-trailer truck. And so the load then is 32 5-foot diameter, 4-foot wide bales. Okay, the key to this thing is you're going to load those racks and have that loaded rack sitting there ready to be loaded on the truck when it gets in. So you're going to take off two empty racks and put on two full racks. So if you look at slide 19, that's a concept for a rack loader. You You're going to set your empty rack on the rack loader, and you're going to load those bales into it four at a time. And the goal is to set the empty rack on, load in the 16 bales, set the full rack off in 20 minutes. In a 10-hour workday, you're going to be loading three racks an hour, so you're going to load 30 racks in a 10-hour workday.
So what do you do for the other 28 or 14 hours to get the 24-hour haul?
Oh, okay. Your crew is going to be loading the racks and set those loaded racks on the ground, and then during the night, when a truck driver gets in, they'll set off their two empties and set their two fulls on and go. There's nobody there at the site to load the truck. They're going to load it themselves.
And you believe a small operation will be able to afford a portion or all of this this racking system?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not.
Okay.
A small operation cannot. Now, let's go back and look at that farm gate contract again. The plan was to grow the material, harvest it, and put it in a satellite storage location.
Okay.
A hauling company with the specialized equipment required moves in, loads out that material, hauls it, and moves on to the next SSL.
Okay.
But that's a very key question. Very key question. Now, the main advantage of this system is not at the SSL. If you go to slide 20, you see that these 16 bale racks are now being unloaded to establish a single line of bales going into your bioenergy plant for 24/7 operation. And you've got to have this. You've got to have not only the single line of bales, but you've got to have a stream of size-reduced material going into your plant 24/7, 47 weeks out of the year. That's your seamless logistics. And a sizable advantage is gained with the 16-bale rack at this receiving facility. Questions and comments about that?
Well, John, what's the advantage of that the round bale at this point versus the big square bale if you were going to have this seamless system?
There's no advantage.
Okay.
There's no advantage.
Do you have a prototype of your rack system out there?
I have a prototype of the rack. It's what I refer to as a half rack. It's made to hold 8 bales, and I have loaded 4 bales in one push and then loaded 4 more bales, so I've done that and know that I can do that. I didn't have the money to get a full rack, so I just got them to make me a half rack, and we verified that we could push the bales in 4 at a time. But your hauling company is going to have the specialized equipment to do all of this. It cannot be an agricultural operation. It's got to be an industrial operation. Now, I know this is a new paradigm for many of you, and so it doesn't, you know, I've been beat up by experts, so you guys can take your shots. Everybody's in a pretty good mood today. They're not pounding my ego into the ground like normal. Okay, this whole thing sort of emulates what goes on with two industries in the Southeast that are very successful. One is the cotton industry. If you'll go ahead to your next slide there, and it shows a module hauler picking up a cotton module in the field. And then if you go to your next slide, which is 22, you see that module hauler is backing up and he's going to put that module onto the feed table into the gin. And then if you look at the next slide, which is slide 23, you see that module feeder there. So as that module moves forward, the module feeder strips away the front of it and establishes a stream of material into the gen for continuous operation. And we have to emulate that with our biomass.
Hey, John?
Yes.
This is Tommy Valco. One thing in the cotton industry, of course, we do remove the module cover.
Now, yes.
In your round bale system, have you considered how to remove that netting material?
Yes. It is not a solved problem. There is a mechanical engineering senior design team that has taken that on as a design project, and they have begun their work, and we are anticipated that they will have their idea and do some testing before the end of this year. So fall semester there to get busy with our idea and build it out, and we will test it.
And you realize, I guess, now in the cotton industry, we have these round modules that we're dealing with, and we have some new technology out there to remove those modules.
Yes, sir. We have looked at that. We've looked at the videotape of it. Yes. Talk about that. See, the reason that, of course, this round module was developed is because it gives you an advantage to uncouple your harvesting operation from your infield hauling operation. Isn't that right, Tommy?
Well, I mean, that parallels what the module does as well. What it did do, though, it has eliminated all the field equipment needed and the personnel.
Yes.
During harvest. So
yes.
You can have a Sunday night or Sunday evening harvest time without a whole crew there, just operator.
Yes. And that point was what I was trying to make when I talked earlier about baling uncouples the harvesting and infield hauling operations. And that's an advantage. And for people who are trying to say that the baling technology will not be successful, I disagree with them for that reason.
It's definitely been being successful in the cotton industry, John. As you well, John Deere has been able to sell quite a few of these round module systems, and even though we're going backwards on container size with using smaller units, which is traditionally not true, when we advance in technology.
Right.
This technology is really moving forward, so I think you're right.
Yeah, let's look at highway hauling. When you take one truck and haul, what's a module, 8 tons?
2,200 pounds, 18 to 2,200 pounds, 1,000 pounds.
So 9 to 10 tons.
Yeah.
Okay, so one truck hauls 10 tons. Now, if you take a flatbed truck and put those round modules on it, you can put over 20 tons on that truck, can't you?
We haven't got there yet. We're only putting 5 on there, and they're about what?
5,000 pounds?
Yeah, 3 tons each, so 15.
So you got 15 tons. Well, that's still an improvement.
Yes.
Over your module hauler.
Plus, those trucks are cheap compared to that module truck we see in the screen.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, so this conversation is illustrating some of the key points I've been trying to make. You're hauling more tons per truckload with your round module. Okay, moving on then. Let's go to slide 24, and this is the sugarcane industry in South Florida. And you notice that they're dumping those bins off the truck. A truck can come in, weigh, dump the bins, and leave in 3 minutes. Those trucks typically will make 10 loads a day. And I think I talked to the feedstock manager at one of those sugar cane mills, and they said, oh, we can unload 1,000 trucks a day. it may have been 1,000 bins a day, but I, you know, some big number. Here's the way it worked. If you go to slide 25, the bin is being lifted off, and those bins are stored too high on the yard, and that's the material that they use to run during the night. And your next slide shows those bins being stacked on the yard for nighttime operation. And see, this system emulates what I've been trying to talk about with this 16-bale rack. I have a number of these 16-bale racks. I don't take the bales out of the rack until I'm ready to empty that rack to supply the material 24/7. Okay, let's go to number 27. Do you need a large forklift to unload 16-bale racks at the receiving filter? Yes. Do you need a large forklift to load 16-bale racks at the SSL? Yes. Is the forklift at the receiving facility disadvantaged? No. That forklift's going to operate continuously. You're going to get good productivity. You're going to have a relatively low unloading cost with that forklift. Is the forklift at the SSL a disadvantage? The answer is yes. The reason being, that forklift is going to only operate about 30% of the time. So the loading operation is going to be more expensive at the SSL. So let's look at a summary here. Is the harvesting cost, baling and infield hauling, higher for the 5x4 round bale? Yes, if you neglect that robustness factor. Is the storage cost higher? No. Is the harvesting cost higher? Until we get a system out there and get some real data on its operation, we can't answer that question. Is the receiving facility cost higher? No. The reverse is true. You get a cost advantage with the 16-bale rack system at the receiving facility of the bioenergy plant. All right, let's go to our last slide. Slide 30. Will seamless logistics ever be important? We ought to ask Bob to answer that one.
No, I'm sure that there are better experts than I for this.
Well, the bioenergy funding opportunity announcement that just came out from USDA uses the term seamless logistics, and that's why I picked up that term.
Very good, John. So, are we ready for questions? John?
Yes.
Okay. If anyone has any additional questions, please chime in at this time.
This is Leif Solheim at ADM. Can you tell me what you mean by seamless logistics?
Yes. That means that you have to have a plan in place that you have thought through all the way from material standing in the field to you have a stream of size-reduced material entering your bioenergy plant 24/7, 47 weeks out of the year. That's seamless. You're going to harvest, you're going to store, you're going to haul, you're going to deliver, you're going to keep this thing running 24/7, 47 weeks out of the year.
Hey, John?
Yes, sir.
This is Sam. You are probably aware of that DOE studies of so-called uniform format biomass supply to biorefineries.
Yes.
And here you are supporting bales.
Yes.
At some point, don't you have to take out the strings or nets and cut it or pre-process or grind it and make it in the right shape and size?
Yes.
To supply to biorefinery?
Yes.
Where do you do that?
You do that at that part of your receiving facility operations.
So
the debale and size reduce at that point.
So
I would not advocate that you try to do it anywhere else in the supply chain. Now, the woody people do the size reduction in the field. They do what's called whole tree chipping, and they'll put all that material through a chipper and blow it into a chip van. So they do the size reduction in the field. I am not an advocate of that for herbaceous materials. And in fact, I think the woody materials will get away from it at some point.
So it should be done at what point? Is it at the biorefinery, inside the gate, outside the gate, at the storage site, or where?
No, it should be done inside the gate.
Wow. So you are giving them a big job to do. Nobody else
can do it as cost effectively as the stationary operation can do it.
Well, still, I think shouldn't this be definitely a part of supply chain?
Yes.
Your logic is to supply the right quality, quantity, moisture content, and so forth
yes.
to the biorefinery.
And that's just what I said. When the man asked about the seamless logistics, I said, well, you start with the material standing in the field, and you end up with a stream of size-reduced material entering your plant 24/7. That's all part of the logistical chain.
Hmm. This is a so-called, not so-called, the DOE study is of ground materials and pre-processed materials and how it increases density and cuts down transportation costs. Do you see anything contradictory there? I think the idea in the DOE studies is to convert those bales. I mean, of course, type of bales you use, but after
right.
that, whether it's a round bale or square bale, then it has to be pre-processed at some point in the supply chain, probably. Otherwise, it will be a humongous task at the biorefinery.
Well, I'm not an advocate of that approach. You know, if you get into these very large biorefineries, like 2,000 tons a day and larger, you may have some facilities out there that are going to receive the raw biomass and do the size reduction and do some centrifugation and then ship from that point to your large biorefinery. But everything that I have talked about has been applicable to receiving that raw biomass and doing the size reduction. What you do with it after that, if you want to make pellets or briquettes or whatever, it doesn't matter to me.
Yeah. I don't know briquetting, but even by grinding itself, and I think you can probably get much more densification. And I don't know how does it, so-called 13 to 15 pounds per cubic foot, which will fill up the truck at the same time, it will carry the, whatever, the recommended load. And so I thought all kinds of getting away from the bales was some kind of idea that the DOE studies was propagating, you know. So I'm just wondering, because what you didn't say is the pre-processing of the bales will be a big job, you know. And I guess that needs to be considered at what point in the supply chain we should do that.
Yes.
John, this is Dick Hegg again. I have a couple other questions for you.
Yes, sir. Sorry, Dick, if I could just interrupt.
Sure.
It sounds like there's an echo. So if folks, again, would, if they're not speaking. Thank you. Go ahead, Dick.
Okay. I assume from what your explanation is, you don't expect to have hardly any storage at the biorefinery of the feedstock. It's sort of the just-in-time.
Dick, you've raised a really good question. Many people, when they write on this subject, think in terms of a 10-day storage at the plant. And as I have analyzed the system I've been working on, I've been trying to make it work with a 3-day storage
okay.
at the plant. Now, can we do it? To do it, you've got to know where all of your storage locations are. You've got to have control of all the loading and hauling operations so that you will know the details of how you're going to get material.
Right.
If you've got people that are delivering to you on their schedule, you cannot operate with a three-day at-plant storage. If you have control of the operation and you're telling people when to deliver to you, then I think the three-day can be made to work. In the Southeast, I guess I question it could be done out in the Midwest where the winter weather is more of an issue. But in the Southeast, I believe we can do it.
Right. Another question I have, I appreciate your presentation, John. I think you very well articulated your position in the round versus the big square.
Yes, sir.
Bale, and I appreciate all the effort that you've done over the years in this part of the chain for cellulosic conversion to energy sources. Looking again though on the cellulose, particularly switchgrass, what's the number of length of storage time that you might have, the maximum on the farm from the time of the, you know, in the spring you say you could harvest maybe until March, but then you're going to have to wait until the next fall.
That's right.
So you're going to have several months of storage on farm storage.
Yes. I hope that we will not have more than 6 months.
Okay.
But you're right. It's a certain amount of storage is unavoidable.
And what's your expectation of what they could do for balers to get it up to, as Sam was saying, up to 15 plus pounds per square foot?
Okay. I know Case New Holland, but I don't know about others, but they have something called a crop chopper. In other words, they chop the material as it comes in the windrow up into the bale chamber. And, of course, that was developed because it's going to improve the feeding of that material, the cattle. I wanted to look at that option as a way of getting a denser bale. Have not had the opportunity to do that, but I would love to see the round bale people find some way to make a denser round bale. You may never get it as dense as you get with seed cotton because it's the properties of the material are different. But I believe we can get a little denser than 7 pounds per cubic foot.
John, this switchgrass versus other herbaceous ag residues, round baling. Could you spell out some differences in the baling operations or the materials, life of the materials till they lose certain amount every year? I mean, what is the difference between switchgrass baling? I thought switchgrass bales aren't they mostly rectangular or square bales?
Well, the only experience I've had is I baled switchgrass and stored the round bales in single-layer ambient storage for 6 months and have sampled those materials and I believe have well documented the losses. And I'll stand on this statement that those losses, those storage and handling losses will be less than 5% over 6 months of storage, and that's in the Southeast.
So are you saying that switchgrass, round bales, and other like corn stover or other ag residues, round baling, these operations are pretty much parallel, about the same, or there are some differences?
I have no experience with round balings of corn stover. You just have to look at the literature and see what's there.
No, okay. All right. My question was, since you are talking about round bales only, I'm trying to see ag residue versus switchgrass. Do they differ in any way in baling operations and whatever?
I have no experience with the with the corn stolen.
Okay. All right.
This is Leif Solheim with ADM again. One thing I can tell you for sure, Dover is not going to shred water. It's just going to absorb it. So the net wrapping and leaving them in the field is going to give you wet bales.
I'm not too surprised to hear you say that. But on the other hand, I will say to you that you'd be absolutely amazed at how well the switchgrass bales thatch. They protect themselves extremely well.
Do you have any number, John? Switchgrass, square bales versus round bales. What kind of, how quickly one gets wet and other resists moisture?
There are studies in the literature on that subject. There's been some recent work done at the University of Tennessee on storing big square bales and storing round bales.
Okay.
And I just referred you to that study.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
John, when you store these bales single layer, do you put them up on anything so the bottom doesn't absorb moisture from the ground?
Yeah. Store them on a gravel surface. That's the only elevation. And you do get some deterioration on where that bale ground contacts the ground. You do get deterioration. If you string wrap the bales, which you don't want to do, those strings will rot, and when you pick it up, that outer layer will slough off, so you want to avoid that.
Even in the switch?
Sir?
Even in the switchgrass, it'll slough off?
Yes. The net wrap does not deteriorate. It survives in contact with the ground.
Questions, folks? Okay, John, well, I'd like to thank you very much for a very entertaining and informative presentation.
You're being very kind to say entertaining. I thought you were going to say controversial.
You said it. Okay. Thank you, in any case. We learned a lot.
Yes.
Appreciate it.
You're certainly welcome.
I wanted to let folks know a couple of things. First of all, our next teleseminar is not going to be until Tuesday, June 1st, and Tom Richard will be presenting about on-farm pretreatment technology that he's been working on. Tom's at Penn State. In addition, I'll be sending out an email soon for folks informing them that these teleseminars have been posted on the National Ag Library's website, and I'll give you a link to access them there. So,
Bob, what is the topic of Tom Richard?
On-farm pretreatment.
Oh, on-farm pretreatment. Thank you.
You're welcome. Okay. Again, thank you, John, and thank you all for participating.
Sure. Yes, sir.
That was very good.
Thank you.